Hello and welcome to episode 112 of Game Store Profits, the podcast where a couple guys get together to talk about God and games and how much we love both of them. So my name is Mike Perna.
And I'm Jeff Romo / surprised it's 112 episodes already. That means I've been doing this for 12 episodes.
It goes fast, doesn't it?
It certainly does. It is kind of like a blur.
It wasn't that long ago that I was having the conversation. I think it was actually the last time I mentioned it was I was talking to Marty because we're probably not going to I've always been a guest host over there at the Gen Con booth for Christian Gamers Guild and Fans for Christ.
Right.
But apparently they, at last I heard, they still haven't confirmed whether they're going to have a booth again or not.
Yeah, I'm hearing like, that from Daniel Fisher. He was mentioning that.
Yeah, so I'm gonna have to make sure that I get a press pass. And so I talked to Marty about what does it take to get a press pass for Gen Con. And he basically says, you need to prove that you've been doing this and you're consistently putting out content. And I said, well, by the time Gen Con happens next year, we'll be doing this for 5 years. And he goes, yeah, that covers it.
Yeah. 112 episodes of podcasts, upwards of about 30 videos that's been put out at this point. Yeah, I think you qualify.
And oh my goodness, the videos.
Before we talk about that, you've got to see if you can't get a multipass, because come on. Multipass, yeah. Mike Burnett.
Okay.
All right, sorry. Okay.
The obligatory multipass Fifth Element reference. We've gotten that out of our system.
Hey, for the past upwards of 14 years since I've seen the movie, I've worked the Fifth Element into every day of my life. So I'm very proud of it.
It's important.
It's important. Yeah, the videos.
We actually were just yesterday, as we're recording this,
right?
We're recording the next session of Victoriana.
Oh my gosh. You guys literally slay me. I mean, I there's no other description. I mean, you guys are so flippin' awesome. I could barely stand it.
The problem I have right now is that I want to be talking about that recording and I want to reference the kind of stuff that we did. But right. In order to do that, I'd have to be spoiling something that hasn't been yet put forth on the videos. Like, they haven't been released yet.
Right, yeah. That's kind of the
problem. I can't talk about I will say exactly what I do in the course of the video. There are certain things that I want to see happen across the internet as a result of these past two sessions.
Yes.
And I'm going to just call it right now. When those videos go live, at least on the Inroads account, I don't care if no one else does it, but at least on the Inroads account, you will see # may I court your cook and # hypothetical trees. And that makes absolutely no sense to anyone.
None.
Until you
None.
Watch those videos.
Yeah. I mean, I'll lay it out there that, I mean, the first few sessions, the way I had it kind of scheduled out.
You were expecting a serious game, weren't you?
You know what? I go in with a modicum of expectation when it comes to tone. I totally do, because I've tried controlling tone. I've told you guys before, I've been game mastering off and on for the past 25, 26 years. And I've learned pretty early on that when I try and go for tone, it is so difficult unless you get the full buy-in and everybody and they know where you're going with it. And then you also have it kind of comes with the possibility of spoilery stuff that goes into the adventures thing. Oh, well, it's going to be kind of this because there's going to be this involved. And they're like, oh, okay, well, we have preconceived notions. Like, no, no, no. It's so much more fun. Just it's like, here it is. Here's the playing board. Here's the scene. Here's the time frame. You've got steampunky goodness. You got magical goodness. You got 1856, you know, Victorian London going on. Take it away, fellas and girls. Just take it away. And you guys do in spades. Oh my gosh.
See, for me, it's always interesting because I'm a big fan of a character-driven experience.
Amen,
and
brother.
Sometimes the character-driven experience is really serious. If all your characters are incredibly serious, you're going to have that tone.
Right.
But if you look at the characters, like, we do have really serious moments. We have the time that, you know, we were coming up on the mob. I'm yelling it at Blackwell, and Loom is insulting me, and all this. Like, mm-hmm. we were totally bought in on those characters, and it drove the story to a very serious kind of place.
Right.
This session, though, really allowed us to play up kind of the, you know, it gave us more dimension. It gave our characters a little bit more room to not just be a trope.
Exactly. Like,
seen enough. I will give you this kind of a hint, because it'll give nothing away. I'm very good at describing these things that doesn't give away plot. The moment that
he's saying this, folks, while I have my finger above the censor button. So yeah. Go ahead, Mr. Perna.
The moment that is causing this hilarity, this stuff that makes Jeff and I just giggle with glee, and if you're listening to if any of our players are listening to this right now, they're probably automatically giggling as well.
Yes.
This whole scenario features heavily on Dr. Lum, or Dr. Loom. It's been pronounced both ways. Hmm. He is playing that character to be a cantankerous jerk.
Yes.
And it's really easy to just fall into that as a trope. Like, we giggle when he insults people because Brent is really good at it. He's really good at crafting a finely honed joke.
And the cool thing is that the type of character he is as a doctor, he works in, it's the highbrow humor, like the overloaded with, you know, multiple syllable words, and just, he really goes for it. It's like, I believe that he went to school. He is a full-fledged medical doctor, and he would know these fabulous insults that he could rain down upon his victims.
Right. And that but it's really easy for that to get really stale.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to lie. When we first started, because I've known Brent for a while, he's been part of our play-by-post, so I've seen him handle a character very well.
Yeah. Yeah.
But when the good doctor, shall we say, came on the scene, I was a little worried, because I'm like, this is going to get really tropey and really just that jerk in the party real quick if he's not careful. Mm-hmm. And this session, and again, I won't go into any more than that, other than to tell you, when Jeff puts out the next series of videos, you should be watching them. Mm-hmm. I will say that it gives the doctor more dimension because of the fact that he's not acting the way you'd expect him to act.
Right.
But it's still very much within character.
Yeah. And the great thing is, and I think that you guys have all kind of expanded that outward too, because, you know, when the noodle incident emerged, you know, we had come off of, like, you know, the whole background of, like, who the characters are and how way they potentially know each other. But then it was like, okay, let's, you know, I wanted to steer away from the let's meet in a tavern and this is where you guys first meet. I wanted to steer away from that, but then I realized, wait a minute, that could make for some good flashback material that we can kind of work into the story. And what I noticed with you guys, which was super awesome, and it's something that wasn't planned, and I'll tell that to you guys out there just flat out, it was not planned. There's the first meeting in the Chinese restaurant in Limehouse, and the interaction there already had so much texture to it for the characters. You know, there was a range to Dove, there was a range to Miss Russell, and all of the characters that were there, and even Nate, who it was like his first time really role playing since
I'm giving Nate a lot of credit, man, because this is his first time in this system. It's basically, I mean, it's been so long that it might as well be his first time role playing.
Pretty much, and he said that.
He stepped in as our only upper class person, and he is stepping into it beautifully.
Oh yeah, like a champ, man. He's really doing well. But yeah, so like you had that interaction at the beginning that already had depth, already had texture, you already had provided some range. Dr. Loom, you know, was really putting his dwarfish foot down as far as the type of character he was. And like you said, there was a risk that it could be one-dimensional. But then, yeah, you launch into this next episode, and it's like, what I saw was awesome, which was totally organic and natural, was the fact that it seemed like this truly was 6 months later. And that's how we played it in the next episode when we go into the Kensington by Torchlight.
It's a little subtle, but Dove's accent is actually getting lighter.
Yes. Yeah. I noticed that. That was really cool. Because it's been a longer time in London. You
know, yeah, there are times when it's still pretty heavy and I go real in the back of the throat kind of accent.
Right.
I go full on, you know, is moose and squirrel. But it's happening a lot less because he's spent six plus months in London being a part of things.
Right.
And so when obviously he wasn't fresh in the city. He did have a bit of a reputation, but I imagined he hadn't been there that long, so it was still very thick. Mm-hmm. Now he'll have I've got to the point where he talks like this, where his words are very clear and very precise, but it has that bit of a hang in the back of the throat. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to keep doing that. It's going to get more like that and less moose and squirrel as we go through it, because of the fact that he's hanging out with all these people who are definitively British.
Right. I mean, and save for Miss Russell, which is kind of cool that you guys can have your little Russian sidebars, because, I mean, while she is half Chinese, half English, she does speak fluent Russian. So it's kind of nice, a nice connection to back home, or at least a positive connection to back home and your roots, I should say.
Yeah. But, so the short version is, guys, you need to be watching these videos.
Yes.
They're between the group that we've got collected and just the fact that Jeff has been killing it with the video. Like, if you look back at the early when we did D&D 5e, Jeff was just learning how to do the video.
Yeah.
And it worked well. I mean, it was fine enough, but it doesn't have the kind of polish that he's brought to it lately. And it really is. If you have any interest in kind of exploring what role-playing games are like, or if you already know what role-playing games are like but just want to see a bunch of people be idiotic on the internet, it is well worth your time. We break it down into like half hour, 40 minute chunks for you. So you don't have to like sit there for the whole like 3 or 4 hour session that we play.
Right.
But, it's so much fun to put together, and I really hope this continues on. And I really hope that you guys actually start picking up these role-playing systems because of this. I'm hoping our goal, I mean, I've stated it ages ago when we first started putting out these videos, but the whole purpose for Inroads Plays is to basically demystify the role-playing experience. It's basically there because so many people are like, so what's a role-playing game like? Mm-hmm. And I can explain it to you all you want, but it's not going to be the same as actually seeing it happen.
Right.
And I'm also very happy that not only do we say that, but we at least have one member of the team in both the D&D 5e and this Victoriana game who has never seen the system, who has never played a game, and who, you know, in the case of Mike Basha, had never even really thought of playing a role-playing game before. Yeah. And I think we got him hooked, by the way. He really enjoyed that.
Oh, he said he's down for the Shadowrun game that we have that's going to be kind of down range a little bit. But yeah, I mean, and that's, again, guys and gals, that's totally what this is about. It's about the experience of role playing, what it's like to like see a gaming group mesh. You know, we had that with D&D, and it was kind of something that kind of grew into it because, again, we're like learning a new system altogether. All of us, we were learning the new system.
Yeah,
and then also bringing Mike on board or Mike Basha on board to like learn role playing games and what that meant, which I think he meshed very quickly. In this instance here, you know, we've got some folks who've played role-playing games before. We've got two, I think you and Alyssa have played Victoriana before. And then, we've got Heather and Brent and myself who've been in the role-playing game culture for quite a long time. I think all three of us individually have been playing role-playing games longer than Alyssa's been alive, by the way. But that aside, and my gray hairs put away, yeah, and then having Nate in there as a new member completely to the role-playing game community, it's great. And that's, again, it's what it's all about, learning how to game, learning a new system if you're interested in Victoriana and steampunk. That's what it's all about. So I hope you guys enjoy it. Log in there to YouTubes and subscribe and keep an eye out for the videos as we post, and we'll post it up on our website, of course, and Facebook, et cetera.
There may or may not be a future Inroads Ministries t-shirt based on what happened last night.
I'm going to put it out there, folks. I know Mike is going to be just as vehement as I am. I don't even know if I said that word right.
It's close enough.
Not close enough. You know what I mean. there, you guys out there who are artists who are up for the challenge, dig into this episode, and you'll know it when you hear it, because the characters are just stand out. It's really cool. But more on that later as the episodes reveal or released.
Yeah, and I think part of the reason this became so big in the beginning of the show is partly because of the fact that we just recorded it last night, and partly because it's becoming much more of a presence seeing this. Real Role Play is a channel on YouTube that you should definitely be checking out. They have, in fact, they were pretty much, their format is very similar to how we decided to do In Rhodes Plays, just because we're so impressed with how they put them together. They run several games at a time. And the big one that just came out, I'm not gonna lie, I'm super excited about the movie The Last Witch Hunter.
I'm cautiously optimistic, but yes.
I want to see that so bad. It just got released yesterday, but I'm currently in the market to find somebody local who wants to go see it with me, because my wife won't go near it with a 10-foot pole. But Vin Diesel, they actually did, the guys at Geek and Sundry and Nerdist got Vin Diesel to sit down and play a D&D game. They actually called it D&D Diesel.
And this is based on a character that he actually put together.
It's actually based on The Last Witch Hunter. So yeah, there's a lot of amazing footage out there on the internet to just experience role playing without necessarily, because I'll tell you what, I fully acknowledge that the buy-in to get into a role playing game is intense. It's totally worth it because the amount of money per hour spent playing is it bal it 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 does not take long before you've balanced that out and are just completely just increasing the benefit. But it does require a big buy-in, and so we want to make sure that you can kind of, street test the system before you really buy into it. And yeah, I'm super happy with these videos, and you guys really need to check them out. They're awesome.
Definitely.
But we're
And
not talking about in
I'll
road.
well, briefly, it was real super quick. Be on the lookout on our Facebook page and in the tavern or on En-ROADS. We'll post up some stuff where you guys can save money when it comes to getting into the game, because the D&D 5e campaign was free because we technically used the free
We use the
materials they offered.
basicals.
We used the basic, and then for Victoriana, the available bundle that was put out by Bundle of Holding. Check out bundleofholding.com. The entirety of the books that I've put together for this was like, I think, seven or eight books for like $24. There were PDFs, so if you can handle PDFs, that's kind of the way to go if you want to do it on the cheap. But yeah, just a heads up on that. But yeah, let's move on. Let's dig into
Yeah,
the next thing, because there's some
In-Rhodes
more.
Plays is In-Rhodes Plays is for YouTube. This is GSP. We need to be talking about board games. Jeff, what have you been playing?
Get into it, baby. Dead a winner. I got a chance to use, because I'm saving up to get the board game. I'm going to get it along with Ashes. These are going to be my two big board game purchases, along with one you teased to me tonight. It's going to be going on my list. Talk about that later. But I
So
got a chance to get.
you are basically the poster child for Tabletop Simulator, because you're playing it on Tabletop Simulator and then buying it. You are what those devs are going to be saying to every game designer ever. Get your game on our system and people will buy the hard copy because you're doing it.
Absolutely. And there's, because I mean, it's like I told you last episode, and just totally espousing the fun and interactivity of the game, and being able to, I'm gaming with you in New Jersey, and I'm in California, and I'm gaming with Daniel Fisher over in Tennessee, and I'm in California. It's just like so amazing. We can connect with our friends in this arena, but at the same time, it's I'd like to be able to grab the cards and look at it and,
Oh,
see
yeah.
the people's faces on a constant basis and say, their body language. Are you a betrayer? Because Daniel betrayed me. Okay, it was a two freaking player dead of winter game, and he betrayed me. And we even started at the beginning saying, let's draw our cards. I took a look at him and I said, no, I'm not the betrayer. I'm just going to tell you right now, it's a two player. We're kind of both learning the system a little bit deeper and understanding it. He's like, yeah, no problem, man. Well, ain't gonna do no betrayer stuff. He was the betrayer, Mike Perna.
All right. I appreciate everything you just said because I know Daniel would do that. I
God, he's
also
so friendly too. He's so
that's how
friendly.
he gets you. That's how he gets you.
Yes.
But I do because of the fact that Dead of Winter now, Dead of Winter has actually been out for a full year now, a year plus, because it came out Gen Con last year.
That's right.
And because we've got a lot of new listeners that have kind of shown up lately, give just a brief overview of what Dead of Winter is in case somebody hasn't heard of it yet.
Got it. So the key word in Dead of Winter is dead. And I guess the other key word in there is winter, because it's the winter after the zombie apocalypse. And you are huddled up in assorted locations. You know, you basically have like a home base. And the game, it works basically, and it's a turn-based cooperative with the betrayal possibility in the deck. You're randomized with certain success goals. And sometimes when you pull that random card, you may have on there betrayer. And so your job is to kind of subtly sabotage, or overtly if you wish, but more often subtly sabotage the game to the point where you can get your winning condition. So when you're going through and playing, what you're doing is you have a home base that has access points, and you can use some of your actions to barricade said action access points. And then you also go out to the neighborhood, like a grocery store, library, that sort of thing, to investigate for supplies and bring them back. So you get supplies. You have to worry about waste piling up, so you have to burn actions to get rid of the waste. And all of these things contribute to two categories. One, your time tracker, so how long you have to complete your scenario and get to your win conditions. And then the morale tracker. And once that morale tracker gets down to zero, the game is over. And obviously when the round tracker gets to zero, your game is over. The cool thing about it is that you can, I think it's much better with more players. I had a chance to do a very basic playthrough a little while back with some folks at the Green Dragon Tavern. And I talked about that back on episode 101 or something like that. So check the library, you can find it. It was a lot more fun with a lot of people because there's a little bit more tension. I admit I didn't pay attention too much to set tension because I was learning the game. But this time, even with two players, there was that tension. And I know we were online and there was not that personal kind of same space type feel, but I still felt tense, you know, because it just gets you because you have, you know, you get to control two characters at the beginning. And then there's certain instances with random cards that you may pull a second character or a third character, I should say. Or,
did you get the stunt dog?
I didn't, no.
Oh.
I got the research assistant, and then I basically got Herschel from The Walking Dead. I got him, and then I got a research assistant. So
I just love the fact that one of the characters is a stunt dog.
Uh-huh.
And one of my oft favorite quotes is seeing some kind of form of entertainment and saying, "This is awesome. It's even got ninjas." And this does. It's got a ninja. So I'm pretty stoked about that.
Well, they've also released some added characters that you can just buy from the site. One of them being Felicia Day.
Yeah, that's right. They have the folks from Tabletop. They have versions of their characters in there as well. Yeah.
They just released, well, I don't think they've released it yet. They're going to release a Mall Mrs. Santa.
Nice.
She's a woman who played Mrs. Santa at a mall and so she's dressed up in that very typical, you know, Mrs. Claus outfit. She's holding like a whiskey bottle. It's amazing.
And it's going to go quite well with the Santa Claus from the mall that's there as well. So if you get those two characters, who knows what could happen.
I'm sure there are Crossroads cards that if the Mall Santa and Mrs. Mall Santa are there at the same game.
Yeah. There's got to be. So it's really tense. It's kind of cool because you have your set things that you need to do each round. You can, you know, move around, explore, attack zombies, build barricades, that kind of thing. But then you start drawing cards called crisis cards. And that just adds all sorts of shenanigans. Like, oh, I don't know, if you don't get these extra things done, a surge of six zombies are going to start piling into your area. You know, little ditties like that. So it keeps the tension real, real big. I mean, it's pretty cool.
And it's very fitting because of the fact that when this episode goes live, it's the week of Halloween.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I got another game I played, but let's shift it over to you. What have you, I, it's going to tie into some super geeky awesomeness that just happened this week. So
yeah,
you've got
to
get to
that. Just happened.
You've got to get to the game you play, because I am drooling over here about wanting said game.
Well,
please,
I actually
please go while I get a napkin. Go ahead.
I actually released a video. I had promised a while back, because shortly after a buddy of mine did a sermon and he mentioned Inroads Ministries in the message, I spent like an hour after the service talking about what games are like now, because everyone was like, oh, I play Monopoly and Risk and everything. And they mentioned games that at the most recent, it was like a game that was designed in like the early 90s.
Right.
And so I'm like, oh my goodness, games can do so much more now. And I started talking about things like And Then We Held Hands, which is a game played in silence that represents a couple that's fighting, that's about ready to have their marriage break up. I told about all these crazy, I talked about The Grizzled, obviously, and I talked about how games are doing so much more now. So in the wake of that, I decided that to kind of just do a swath of videos, just very introductory videos about what games are out there and what kinds of experiences you can have, I'd do a video series where I just mention my top 10 in my collection. And number 10 actually was the game that I played. I got a chance to play this week. And that is Star Wars Armada.
Sorry. I told you I was going to contain that and I didn't. I apologize.
I completely understand, because I'm in the process of packing to move to the new house. And one of the things I had to do was make sure that all my miniatures were okay for the move.
So I'm assuming you basically took them one by one in your car over to the
I transported them individually. I buckled them in for safety.
There you go.
Now, in case you don't know, this is basically a miniatures kind of tactical battle game. It's a game where it takes place in the Star Wars universe. You are pretty much the fleet commander over either the Empire or the Rebels. And I only have the base game right now, which gives two Rebel spaceships and, of course, the iconic Imperial Star Destroyer and a bunch of TIE Fighters and X-Wings. And you are basically commanding these ships in an epic battle. And
so good.
I am just now getting into the real nuance where you can start adding things like you can start adding special people onto your ships. You can start having special pilots on your X-Wings. I'm only just getting into that, because I will say, before you go and pick this game up, it is a bit rules intensive if you've never played a game like this before. Because there is no board. There is no any kind of usual board game experience that if you don't know to expect this, it's a little weird. You actually do measure out on the table. I can go this far and I can shoot people within this range. And there's a little guide you use to determine whether a guy's in range. If you've never done miniatures combat before, that is really intense and really scary. But I will tell you that it's really, really, really approachable in the way they do this. It's a very simple system. It's basically you have your ships, and your ships move and fire if they can, and then your squadrons move and fire if they can. There are some fiddly bits. There are little defenses that you have to keep track of. You can add debris to the battlefield, and you have to deal with like how fast is your guy moving. There's a lot of moving pieces, but they're really, really simple. My brother and I sat down and were like, we're learning this game. And this was before this week. And we sat down and we're like, all right, we're going in blind. We only have the vaguest of vague notions as to how to do this. How long does it take us? And probably within a half hour, we're like, oh, you do this and then do this. And you make sure that you can't do this. Because one thing that we learned is the smallness of the battlefield we had created. Because navigating these ships, especially on the Imperial side, that thing is slow. And if you don't, and it's hard to turn. It is the Titanic of space.
You can't make a U-turn in this bad boy.
You cannot. If there's an iceberg dead ahead, you're going to be at the bottom of the ocean. This thing does not.
Right ahead.
Yeah, this thing does not turn. And the way the rules are written, if your ship travels outside of the boundaries of the battle, it automatically blows up.
Oh.
So needless to say, we're like, oh, we can't do that because we were not prepared for that.
I should say not.
We would all lose ships.
We'd it's have not like it's not like Halo when you go out of the field, you got like 10 seconds to get back in. It's just a couple.
Yeah, no, it is. That. It is. You travel outside of the zone, it blows up.
Wow.
But it is so good. And I'm not going to lie. They just announced, I don't know if they've announced it. No, it's actually available for, it's definitely available for pre-sale. I believe it's shortly going to be available in stores. Wave 2 of the expansion ships is out. And, oh my goodness, they all look so great. I want them so bad. I want to field an epic fleet. And I want to make that happen so badly. Right? I'm perfectly happy with the base game. Don't get me wrong. I'm not like, it's not one of those things where if you get the base game, it's really not the full experience. I think you can have a meaningful, really entertaining experience with just the base game. But, oh, I love it so much. I'm like, oh, I want these ships so bad.
So it's not like a Warhammer you have to in order to like keep up with things and
no, you know. Warhammer hates you.
Yeah. It's a punishment game. It's a punishment game.
And I say that, you know, obviously kind of flippantly, but not really, because they just released the new, at least the fantasy game. Mm-hmm. They just released a new one that basically made all the old things completely obsolete and useless.
Yeah. I read about that and I was like, this, and I was telling the article as if the article's listening, right? I'm telling the article, listen, this is why I don't get into you.
Right.
This is why. And obviously the article cried a little bit, but whatever.
Yeah, I love that universe, but I'll never play in it because I refuse to do that, because you have to drop like $600 to field an army anymore.
Yeah, I'll give you one word. War Machine is an alternative that you can potentially afford. And that's
no, at this point, because I have Armada and that potential money sink,
mm-hmm.
If I got another one, it would be Tail Feathers.
Oh, that's right. The Mice and Mystics. That's right.
If I were to get another one, and nothing says I will, because I don't think I necessarily need another one and, you know, mm-hmm. budgets.
Right.
But if I were, it would be Tail Feathers, because I love the fact that that integrates both the air combat as well as ground troops.
Yeah.
And you team that up with the fact that you can actually bring your characters from Mice and Mystics into that game.
So good.
If I were to get another one, it would be that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's a really good point, because it's really nice having that compatibility with the other game, with the main game. Well, this is going to be a main game of itself, Tail Feathers is, but still, the crossover is very cool.
But yeah, no, I absolutely love Armada. I highly recommend it. I'm actually, it's fun. One of the pastors at church, he's actually the guy who performed my wedding. He's a real good friend of mine. And he told me stories about when he was a kid and he would play the epic war games. And he'd talk about dogfights that they would have. And I'm like, Jeff, I need to play this with you. I need to push minis across the table with you, because that just has to happen.
So
I am a little worried though, because I feel like I'm pulling out my enabler card again, because yeah. he straight up told me if I got into gaming, I know I would love every moment of it, but I also think that I would never love anything else ever again.
Yeah, it's a dangerous slippery slope, my friend.
So I'm trying to be good about it. I'm trying to make sure that I find it in a place where he's going to really enjoy it, because I know he will, while at the same point encouraging him not to throw his life away.
See that? And you know what? I'm totally there. We had that conversation about, like, you know, I would dig getting into Magic the Gathering, but I know myself that I don't know if I could budget it properly. I'm a cheapskate by nature, but I can also be very obsessive about things, you know? So, you know, i.e. I play Shadowrun all the time because I'm obsessed with that world. But Yeah, that's why I was kind of like thinking, you know, Ashes is great. You'll have, if there's going to be expansions, it's going to be slow in the coming.
And again, it's a perfectly sound game in
Without it.
box.
Yeah, without it. You've got so much playability. And I've mentioned that before in the games that I've selected to play. There's so much replayability in these games. You know, like with Dead of Winter, there's a lot of different scenarios. And add to the fact that you have multiple characters and multiple players. You get a different set of people around the table, kind of like we were talking about with role-playing games. You get a totally different tone sometimes. So, yeah, so that's kind of the reason I go with some of those games is not, you know, not just the replayability, but I know my obsessive nature, and if I got my hands on Armada, then I would say, okay, I need Boba Fett's ship. I need this. I need the next expansion. Oh, it would not end, and my wife would not be happy.
And there are basically, I don't want to say it's two versions of the game because it's two separate games, but there is X-Wing miniatures, which is individual ships. Like you have an X-Wing, whereas Armada has fleets of S or squadrons of X-Wings and squadrons of TIE fighters. It really is. It's six of one, half a dozen of the other. Like I would say that if you have X-Wing, you know. If you're in that miniatures game, you don't really need Armada because it seems, having not played the X-Wing miniatures game but only watched it, it has a very similar vibe. This just kicks it up to the next size level.
Yeah,
It
but Mike, Star Wars Armada, it goes up to 11.
goes up. That's too. That is too out of date movie references that you've made.
It. Yeah, no, that game looks totally pretty. Totally pretty.
Well, I will kind of let's kind of move after we've done what we've been playing. And there's a couple games that came out recently. We were talking about it before we started recording. And they're both really interesting because they have that vibe like you want to have the same group of people. Like they're the kind of game that if you have like a weekly game night, these would be a must have. And two of them came out recently. One has just been everywhere. And the other one's kind of under the radar. It was kind of a big deal at Essen, but it, you know, I'm not seeing a lot of broad spectrum chatter about it. It's more very specific. A couple of people are saying awesome things about it.
Yeah, that was a perfect example. You mentioned it right before the podcast, and I was like, I think I heard something about it. And then you talked about the other one. I'm like, yeah, that's all up and down my news feed. Yeah.
Well, let's address the big one because whether people have played it in this version or not, they'll probably have experiences with its granddaddy. Pandemic Legacy just got released.
Yep. People are very happy with this game. Very happy.
I'm intrigued because whenever you tack Legacy on, in case you don't know what that means, the first big game that came out with it was Risk Legacy. And it took the basic aspect of Risk and added some permanence to it. If you win a game, you get to name a city, and that's your city. And if you control your city, then you get special bonuses. You can drop atomic bombs, and the next game you play, that will be a nuclear. There will be nuclear fallout, and you'll have penalties for being in that place. Like it had permanence. There were cards that got ripped up and destroyed. There were cards that got revealed only after certain situations happened. There's lots of different stuff that evolves in that game, and it has permanence. When you play game one, it will be a different experience by the time you get to game six. They're doing that now with Pandemic. And I remember when they first said that, I'm like, how can you do that? Because I've played Pandemic more times than I can count, but I can tell you how many times I've won because I can do it on one hand.
Oh, but they ratchet it up here. They ratchet it up.
And so I'm wondering when the world gets destroyed so readily in that game, how does it last as a legacy? And I've been listening to a bunch of interviews with the designers, and I have to say, when I first started hearing about it, I was intrigued but not super excited. I am really interested in this because of the fact that they really did take into effect, if you lose all the time, it gets easier. But if you win all the time, it gets harder.
Right. I was very intrigued with that.
it finds that nice middle road, or at least that's their claim, and I haven't seen anybody say it does otherwise.
Right. It's, you know, it's really intriguing. I mean, the idea, I mean, and the basic concept is that you're fighting this virus. You're trying to keep it at bay for a whole year. And it kind of made me think a little bit of Dead of Winter, because that was fresh in my mind, is that for each round, there's like a new crisis that comes up. So in this case here, what happens is there's new surprises. There's new things that come up each month as you're going through this year. And I don't know, man, it gives it a new breath of life. I guess that's kind of like a bad phrase for this, because it's about a virus. You don't want that. But yeah, it breathes fresh air into the game. And I've only played Pandemic once. I want to play it significantly more times. But yeah, the idea of this game totally intrigues me.
I do think, like we're, this is going to be a theme for this and the next game we talk about. It's that idea, like, I would feel weird playing this with other people. Mm-hmm. Besides, like, the group that started. Right. Like, it would be weird to me to either to lose one of those people or to pick up somebody else. It would be weird.
Yeah, because you might be able to roleplay it saying, oh, he succumbed to the virus. He got too close. You know.
There's lots of ways. There's lots of ways to do it. I mean, I can sell any story you want.
But you're looking for the dynamic, though.
Yeah, it's that whole aspect of, oh, remember that time when this happened?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I would definitely say that if I had a weekly game group where it was happening consistently, I would get, oh my goodness, I would get this. I would frame the board at the end. Like, I would, oh my goodness.
That's a great idea. That's actually pretty cool. So Brent Brown, if you're listening to this, we know you have a regular game group for this, so might want to take a peek.
It's so good. I know there's a couple people in the tavern that are talking about the fact that they're playing and they're like month four. Yeah. And oh my goodness. I'm already trying to get April Lynn from the tavern to kind of write through her experiences with it.
Oh, that'd be so cool. That'd be so
cool. Oh yeah.
Cool.
She goes, we're it's going to take us a while to get it done. I go, I don't need it now.
No, like a blog, you know, like you got a blog like, yo, we went through this and that and the other thing and, you know, this failed and this didn't fail. And it's like, oh, I'd be so sick. She'd be so good at it.
Yeah. The other game that does this is called Time Stories. And this one, like I said, it has its adherents. There are people who are super excited about this game and will not stop talking about it. At the same point, it doesn't have that. I don't know, that broad spectrum. Like, Essen happened and everyone was talking about it, and then Essen was over and people just stopped talking about it. Right. At least as a whole. It's called Time Stories, and the whole concept is that you are part of the Time Agency. You are actually going back into the history to solve some kind of problem or mystery or something like that. And it actually takes place on this thing, on these runs where you're exploring the deck to see what happens. I don't know if they coined the term for this game or if it's something that's been slowly developing, and this is just the first one I've seen. But they called it a dexploration game.
I love it.
The big downside that everyone's talking about is that you only basically get one play of this game, because there is no real reason. Once everything has been explored, once everything has been seen, it's hard to go back. Again, I don't say that from experience. I've not even seen a copy of this. I'm hoping that at some point I can get my hands on it. Mm. But just from what I've heard is that everyone's like, there's really no reason for me to play this. It lasted like 6 hours of playing and it's done. Okay. For me, if the experience is really good, I don't mind that.
So is the concept, because I noticed that we were talking again before the episode started here, and I noticed that there's I guess it's kind of an expansion, or it's just a new story.
It's a new story.
And it, you know, called the Marcy case expansion. So is the plan here that they're going to continue to release new stories, and that's just kind of how they breathe?
Oh, they've already planned like six.
Okay. All right. So that kind of gives it the, unfortunately, it's a replayability, but it's at a cost because I'm looking here at Cool Stuff Inc. and that expansion, the Marcy Case expansion, is $21. So, it's almost like a whole new game, technically.
Right. And again, I think if you have the same that game has a 2 to 4 player base. And I don't know. I think if I had four people who were really sold on the idea, I would do that because I'm really interested in the whole time travel experience, the idea of because that provides that loop. There's another game that is nothing like this one, but it does that as well, that idea of messing with time. It's called Tragedy Looper. It's that idea of you learn something each run through, but it's all moving towards the same ending of finding out the mystery, solving the puzzle. It looks gorgeous. I really love the character design in the game. I really love just the way it seems to feel. But I don't know. I am leery because of the fact that we deal with a world of budgets. I don't, it's hard for me to bite that cost right now, but man, I really want to get my hands on it because of the fact that I want to that experience. I want that slow revelation of what's going on. I want that shared history. It's my go-to phrase. I want that shared history with a group of players that we're together in this, watching the story unfold and actually participating in the unfolding story. That I want that experience. And I don't know if I'm gonna, if Pandemic Legacy gives me that, or Time Stories, or waiting because Rob Daviau keeps talking about the idea of Seafall, which is a legacy pirate game.
You had me at Pirate.
So I don't know what game is gonna be the one that convinces me, yes, get this and find the people. But I'm right on the edge with so many of these because I think they'll be really amazing experiences. I just haven't gotten the gumption to get them yet.
Man, no, I'm totally on board. The only thing that kind of floated across my radar on this discourse here is the idea that I know how much enjoyment you get out of the players around the table, and it might be one of those things that if again it hinges on if the revelation is as good as it's being billed as being. The only thing I can think of to get continued enjoyment out of it after you've gone through it once is to sit with a new group of people and watch their joy and their intensity as the revelation rolls out. I don't know. It's the only thing I could think of,
No, I think there's something to that with Time Stories. I don't know about Pandemic Legacy because I'm sure that at least if it's the same as with Risk Legacy, you are actually marking the cards and marking the board and getting rid of stuff. Like, I think that's a one and done experience for me. Don't get me wrong, when you tell me I'm going to have 18 play sessions, I'm fine with one and done. But I think with Time Stories, you can get the I'm playing this. Now I'm going to watch as these other group of people has that same I'm participating in what these other people are doing. And even if you know the fact that you get to watch these other people do it, I think that at least for me, that would still be a valid experience for me.
That's why I mentioned it, because just knowing you as I do, I know how much enjoyment you get about the people around the table, and I'm the same way. That's why I game master most of my role playing games, is because I love seeing the reaction of the people around the table or around the virtual
Oh,
table, whatever. So,
it was fun. Somebody, so
I get that.
I was playing with some buddies the other day, and one of them cracked my code. I basically did. I tell them because everyone thinks that because I play games a lot, I'm automatically good at them, and I will automatically win. And I quickly show that that's not the case at all.
I disproved that with our first session of Ashes, by the way.
Yeah, you destroyed me. But here's the thing. A lot of the reason why I lose consistently, now granted, part of it is because I'm not all that great, but the reason I lose consistently is because so much of my energy is me giving away stuff that I'm doing so that somebody else can learn the game.
And I figured that's why I won Ashes.
I spend so much time as the teacher of the game that I can't hide my strategy. I can't I can't be behind the curtain. I have to be up front, and I have to pull the curtain back so that other people can see what's happening.
Right.
So it's hard to have the kind of strategy that wins when you're explaining how other people can win.
Yeah. No, I hear you. I hear you.
But I do really love... Don't get me... that's not a complaint, is what I'm saying.
No.
I love it. I love teaching games, and I love losing to people who've never played the game before because it makes their night.
It does.
But yeah, I do think that Time Stories could have some replay value. I'm leaning that way, just because I don't have a regular group right now, so I would need to court a group.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Especially somebody who's going to be willing to do it for 12 months, you know, for a year, or, you know, however many sessions you can squeeze in, I guess. If it was just a one-month, you know, once-a-month thing, then maybe...
If you win every time, it's 12 sessions.
Oh, yeah, that's right. If you don't actually die from the virus. That's right.
The designers, on an interview I saw with the guys at Rolling Dice and Taking Names, they estimated the average is going to be about an 18-game experience. Because what happens is if you lose a month, you do get one opportunity to go back and try that month again.
So they're thinking like, you know, 6 and 12 or 8 and 6 or whatever.
Yeah, they're saying on average, they're expecting through the playtesting they saw, they're expecting about an 18-game experience.
Got it.
But yeah, I don't know. I think that one thing that's interesting in the course of all our discussions, it's this idea of learning after you nail the basics, that's the time when you're free to move on to the other things.
All right.
Because when we talked about our Victoriana game, we're like, okay, we had to have our beginning session. We had to see where these characters fit and see how they develop. And even though we're a long way from done, we've started to actually start seeing that, okay, we know what the system does now. We know what our characters are like now. Now we can get into the fun stuff. I don't have to be the big ugly Russian bear. I can be the guy who is the local hero, the fun guy, the one that everyone enjoys talking to. I can be that guy too.
Yeah. Yeah, you find your depth. You find your depth.
Yeah. Moving on to Dead of Winter, the first time you played it, you said, I didn't pay attention to the tension because I had to learn the game. But right. The second time was much better. For me, Armada, I learned the basic version of the game, which doesn't include all the fun additive stuff. Now I'm getting into all that stuff, and I love the fact that I can have Grand Moff Tarkin on my ship, and that how that means something. Like, I love that stuff, and I'm just getting into that now, but I had to learn the base game first. And in these games, we're all about the you need to have the other people with you to learn and to be at the same place and to walk through that story. I think there's something really interesting in that idea that before you can move on, you have to nail the basics.
Right.
And... Right. You know, the passage that comes to mind is that idea of just that concept of you should be further on. You know, you should be off milk now and eating meat, but you're not. It was a condemnation there. It's like, hey, dude, get the basics set, but you should be further along. But you can kind of extrapolate to that saying you do need to have the basics first. But then that basic is supposed to grow into a deeper, deeper experience.
Right. Right. I mean, you go from like, because it's interesting what you're using the example there of the Dead of Winter thing. The first session was about me learning, was about me getting into the understanding of how I can experience the game. And the next one was experiencing the game. It's kind of, I think kind of what you're steering at maybe here is the idea that you're learning, you know, you learn the basics of faith, you know, faith in Christ, that it's not all a cakewalk, it's a difficult walk, but at the same time, you're dealing with eternity here. And you get those basics. Now it's time to go from Jerusalem and go to Samaria and go to the outer parts of the world to live out that faith. And yeah, you gotta, You gotta get off the milk and get into the hard food. You gotta go ahead and experience that group experience, getting in around the table and getting into, whether you're playing a role-playing game, you're getting into character, or you're playing a tabletop, and you're like, okay, I think I got the hang of it. I've got people around me who are loving on me because they're helping me learn about this experience, and I'm totally digging this. I mean, that's just what it's all about, is getting good at it, getting better at it, and the experience. Gosh, the experience with some of these games, it's so amazing.
Well, I think there's that progression. And I think we need to have each level of that progression, because nobody is at the end from word go. You don't start at the end.
No, not at all.
And
Not at all.
it's important to have that progression. I mean, obviously we can make the correlation between both faith and gaming here. You don't At the beginning, you have to learn, in board gaming, it's the rules. In faith, it's that basic doctrine. You need to know who God is. What's your relationship with him? What the nature of sin. These are things that need to be explained. These are things that need to be taught. I know when I first came to faith at 17, I needed to be taught. As a typical teenager, I thought I knew everything. And over the next almost 20 years, I've realized that I knew nothing.
Oh, the Lord knows how to grind that out of you, doesn't he?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. But it's really interesting, 'cause yeah, I needed to be taught, and I did. I got my training. I got a bunch of education. I got a bunch of time doing ministry. Now, don't get me wrong, this is not me saying, oh, I've done all my learning, I've finished that. I obviously, even in and outside of faith, everyone will tell you that the best way to view life is to always be learning something.
Absolutely.
I'm not there, but I had that time of intense training that prepared me to then ask deeper questions, ask bigger things, be able to, I don't know, to exchange ideas with people who think differently than me. Because at the beginning, you just need to have something. You need to have some kind of foundation, and you build on that. So at the beginning, you have that stage of just learning the rules, just learning the basic concepts, the what is this? And then you get to move beyond that. You get to start in board gaming, it's strategy, it's planning. In faith, it is going to that deeper level, that expression of that faith, that two people are saying two different things. Why do you think one way is right versus another? It's discussing where ideas come from, how does scripture fit into things. You go into that deeper level stuff when you handled the basics.
Yeah, and it's the idea that you're constantly learning is a big part of it too. It's like you said, you have that foundation you're starting with, but at the same time, once you feel, whenever all truly foundationally solid in our faith, completely and truly and thoroughly 100%, we're always learning. But we get to a point where we have that confidence to say, okay, I can roll my own dice now. I can make my own character sheet. I can do all these things now, and I can start expanding. I can start, and get deeper into my faith and ask, like you said, those deeper questions. But there's also the part where we got to be careful of the other end of the spectrum, where we get complacent in it. Like, oh, I've done the whole Monopoly thing. I've done the whole Munchkin thing. I've done all these things, and it's just like, eh, whatever. But then you miss the point, like what you're talking about with time stories and how I was suggesting, I know you, Mike, and I know that you could replay this game because you get joy out of other people. So, don't lose out on the idea that you think something is lukewarm or stale or whatever, because there's other people who haven't played this before. And you've mentioned this before on other episodes that, you're totally willing to dust off the old games and say, hey, let's play because you've never done it before. and let me sit back and enjoy this because I get to see you play it for the first time. So, which I've enjoyed personally with you because I've talked about older games and you've like, oh yeah, there's this and that going on with it. And I said, yeah, my first game I bought was Munchkin and you didn't hatch at my face, which was pretty cool. So yeah, I mean it's that give and take. It's going through your progression and leveling up in your faith, if you want to use a gaming term. But it's also making sure that you don't get lukewarm. You don't want to end up like the, what was it in Revelation 3 something, where they're talking about the Church of Laodicea, which is, you're neither cold or you're neither hot. You're not helpful. You're just lukewarm, and I'm going to spit you out. And it's like, okay, I don't want to get to that point, Lord. I want to be continually vibrant and continually vital. Help me do that. So, yeah, no, it's interesting that we can make these correlations with games, of all things.
You've been on the podcast for 12 episodes. You've now come to realize that we can pretty much make that happen with anything.
Yeah, we can. Yeah, we can. Oh my goodness, so good. So good.
So, Jeff, before we get into anything, tell us a little bit, break down kind of what people can expect to see from our Inroads plays.
Well, so the most recent, as of this podcast, the most recent episode was the first three episodes of session two, which is Kensington by Torchlight. So I think we have like a little bit of a cliffhanger there. We're going to go into a couple episodes where I did a one-off with Alyssa, who plays Monsieur Joyeux, a well, I'm not even going to describe the character yet because I want her to kind of unfold that for you.
I haven't even seen this video yet.
Yes, and what was really cool is that it timed out well because we recorded our last session where the team reunites and you don't know exactly what happened on the other side of it. So pretty cool stuff.
She hadn't seen the video we did without her, and we hadn't seen the video that she did without us, so.
Right. And never has there been a phrase more utterly inappropriate when she said, "I'm here to do a séance." So look for that, kids, when the episodes come out later. But yeah, so we'll have like a little flashover to her and like what happened while she was away, and then we come back to Kensington by Torchlight. So I'm looking to try and schedule this out to where we have episodes releasing every week. And if it looks like it may not happen because we have a scheduling conflict to do the next episode, then I'll make sure to let the fans know. But I really am so happy that you guys are enjoying it. I see the numbers, where people are, coming in and viewing the videos and everything, and there's more subscriptions on the YouTube channel. I'm just so stoked that you guys are enjoying it, and I hope you guys keep coming back. But I am going to be. I love GMing, but I'm going to be happy to hang up the GM duties because I know that you'll be doing Numenera later this year, hopefully, or maybe the beginning of
Later
2016.
this year, you want to get rid of us that quickly?
No, not at all. I actually would like to see the campaign continue as a side campaign that we may not even need to record, but just keep the group going because it's just so good. Is that good? This group. Yeah, and we've talked about it before where there's, we had an awesome time with D&D, and I do not want to diminish the board members or how that group came together, but ever so often there's that whole lightning in a bottle type thing, and I really feel that happening with this group. So
Yeah, every group has a personality.
yeah, and so I'm stoked to see where it goes and where you guys take the adventure. So yeah, there you go. And then one quick thing too is that Daniel Fisher, he was a fan of the show, now a part of the ministry, and also a guy that has an episode of En-ROADS or Game Store Profits under his belt. He is a huge aficionado of Savage Worlds. So I went to Bundle of Holding, got a great deal. And as of the time this episode drops, I think the sale is still going to be on. So dig it, check it out, find out what's going on. And he's going to do a quick walkthrough of the Savage World system. He's going to run me through like a character creation. He's going to throw skeletons or hammers or wrenches, I don't know, something at me. And yeah, so we'll have like a little brief tutorial on Savage World. So we'll have that coming out as well.
Excellent. Well, like I said, I'm going to continue doing my Mike's Top 10 of Tabletop. It will I don't know if it'll be able to be put out regularly just because there is so much happening on the in the ministry right now. There is so much going on. I don't know if I'll be able to get it out regularly, but I will try at least close to every week. I don't know if I'll be able to hit that or not, but it'll be close to it because I've got 10 videos to do.
And get over there
So
and check out that Armada video for the number 10. Super
yeah,
awesome.
And those are going to be very introductory, very cursory, very, yeah. This is what games do. This is why I love this game. I don't even do like a full breakdown of how to play it. I literally just talk about why I love the game. I really hope it'll be just a springboard for you guys to do your own research and find the games that you want. And if you're watching that video and you go, oh, another great one is this, definitely comment either on the YouTube channel or on the Inroads Ministries site itself. Because ideally the goal is to get more people playing more games. So any way we can do that. You guys can definitely be listening as Extra Life by the time this goes live. Extra Life will be happening in 2 weeks. So there will only be 2 weeks. There'll be less than 2 weeks, actually. It'll be like a week and 3/4 left before Extra Life. We are at just over $800 raised so far. You guys are awesome. But we are trying to get that $1,500 goal to give a kid a week's worth of care without having to pay for it. That's our goal. I know we can do it. We've consistently raised over $1,000, but I think we can get that $1,500. And you guys are hopefully going to be able to partner with us as we do that. There's going to be information throughout the weeks going on the site, on our Twitter account, on the Facebook page, everything. I'm going to be at the point. I haven't hit the point where I'm doing it every day, but when it comes to the week of, you will probably hear me talk about Extra Life every stinking day leading up to the event, including a preview video, which will be actually the first video I make in the new house. So definitely be looking forward to that. And yeah, so Extra Life is big. We have our first official sanctioned church game day.
We've been
doing game days now for just about 2 years, but we've always been a guest at a church. Like, we haven't been part of what the church is doing. We're just a guest there using their space. This will be the first time that Inroads actually has a game day at a church where the church is partnering with us. I'm actually working with my buddy who is in charge of the student ministries at our church. And we are doing a whole big thing. We're getting the youth group to... I'm training the youth group to be leaders, to teach games to other people. We're trying to bring families from the community, from the church, and get them all playing at the same time. It's going to be awesome. That's going to be happening in January. And when that comes closer, you will not get me to shut up.
And we'll get that Periscope working. That'd be kind of cool.
I definitely hope to.
Very cool.
All right, guys, that is it. Again, if you like what we're doing and you want to see more of it, we would love it if you would support Inroads. At InroadsMinistries.com, you just click on the donate button. It gives you instructions on how to do that. Your donations literally help us do this. We want to do more game days. We want to put more content out. We want to have more people focused on the ministry as opposed to doing the ministry when we can.
Right.
All that requires funding, and it requires prayer, and it requires you guys partnering with us to do that. So if you like what we're doing and you want to see more of it, please consider donating, especially if you can do what is called renewable donation, where basically once a month, even if it's $1 a month, that is a huge deal, and we would greatly appreciate it.
And I'll throw something in there too, Mike. You know, you had an article that's out on the Inroads right now about a call for contributors. You know, yes. If treasure is not in your wheelhouse, talent just might be. So, you know, we would definitely crave some talent. You know, if you guys are looking to, you know, write some articles, or if you wanted to do some instructional videos, or even, hey, we had a great game day, we had a few shots of this and we want to upload it, you know, we'll definitely consider it, take a look at it. And if it's something that we can just pop on the channel or put an article out, do it. You know, or you want to be a part of our Inroads plays, you know, whatever that case may be, don't hesitate to hit us up.
All right, guys, that'll wrap up episode 112. Hope you'll come back in another couple weeks to listen to the next episode. And always remember that God is the game master. No matter how the dice fall, the game plays on.